In a Jamaica torn between political turmoil, promise, and peril, one boy's journey from the dusty tracks of Anato Bay to the raucous, pulsating heart of Kingston rewrote the rules of music, fame, and survival. Desmond Ballantyne, later crowned Ninja Man, the Don Gargan, came of age dodging poverty, violence, and the ruthless code of the streets. But it wasn't enough just to survive. He demanded to be heard. His voice, born out of hunger and forged in sound system clashes, would incite riots, ignite hope, and ultimately split a nation's conscience wide open. What does it cost to become a legend when your every triumph is shadowed by controversy and your legacy hangs between redemption and ruin? This is not just the story of a star. It's the raw, unvarnished saga of dancehall's fiercest gladiator, whose rise and fall mirror the soul of an island forever in flux. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, Birth of the Badman, Anato Bay, 1966. Desmond John Ballantyne was born before dawn broke, in a world defined by the lush red soils of Anato Bay, a small ocean-bitten parish on Jamaica's northern coast. The house where he first drew breath was no more than a patchwork of splintered boards, each plank holding off rain, wind, and the indifference of the elements with tenacity learned over hard decades. From the start, Desmond's world was forged in a place that offered beauty and hardship in equal measure. His earliest years were marked by the aftershocks of independence, a country finding its rhythm, neighborhoods fluctuating between joy and deprivation. The Ballantyne home pulsed with the laughter and labor of three children and two parents who carried their own scars from pre-independence Jamaica. His mother, a woman guided by faith and fierce practicality, shaped much of Desmond's early sense of home. She was the one who marshaled the children out at first light, her voice rising above the crow of roosters as she parceled out chores or held them tight through thunderstorms that rattled the fragile shutters. She scrimped and hustled, finding ways to stretch a handful of yams or saltfish into a meal for five. Her prayers anchored the family through each season of want, her hymns stitching hope into the fabric of daily life. Desmond's father, by contrast, was a man carved from lean years in the cane fields, wrapped in silence, his hands rough with old calluses and old pain. Some days he disappeared into labor with a haunted look. Other days he sat on the porch, sharing stern or cryptic words about struggle, discipline, and what might await a boy too wild for his own good. There were times when his discipline, delivered with a strap or a cold stare, landed harder than any lesson from the church. Yet there were also nights he softened, holding Desmond close as the cicadas sang and the lantern's glow flickered across their faces. Desmond learned the rules of survival well before he entered school. By five, he was knee-deep in the river, filling battered buckets and balancing bundles of firewood on the footpaths between home and the hills. He became acquainted with hunger, learning to mask it behind mischievous grins and quick feet. The market's bustle was a wonder. Traders calling out gossip and goods, the smell of frying dumplings tangled with the scent of dried fish and tropical rain. Every transaction, every interaction was a negotiation, and Desmond became sharp-eyed, quick-tongued, eager to catch anything that might slip from neglect or chance. The musical heartbeat of Anato Bay was unceasing. In the daylight, mothers sang to hush babies or passed the time shelling peas, their voices threaded through the steady percussion of life. At church, the congregation's harmonies filled the boxed-in heat with an almost defiant hope. On Sunday afternoons, a battered transistor radio in the corner fed ska and roots reggae through static, melodies seeping into Desmond's bones. He watched uncles and older boys animate stories with rhythm and gesture, the lyrics bristling with tales of everyday survival, resistance, and faith. Scarcity was a companion, Some weeks, the Ballantyne's field yielded enough for bread and boiled dumplings. Other weeks, the family relied on the kindness of neighbors or the sometimes unpredictable bounty of the sea. Crops could be stolen or ruined in a night. Storms might swallow entire season's work. Desmond's feet often outgrew his shoes before a new pair could be found. So he ran barefoot, the calluses thick beneath his heels, his laughter loud enough to ward off complaint. School was equal parts liberation and challenge. The journey was long and the classrooms crowded, but learning felt like a privilege. Desmond enjoyed stories, reciting them for classmates as though staging an impromptu performance, using rhythm and wit to keep his small audience entranced. Still, the specter of survival hovered. Truancy was common, and hunger followed even the brightest children home. By the time the 1970s unfurled, change whispered through Anato Bay. There were rumors of factory work, dreams of the big city, Kingston, with all its danger and possibility. Men lingered in the shade after long hours, debating whether the city's allure was salvation or ruin. At night, Desmond listened to his parents talk in hurried, hushed tones about migration and opportunity, about whether faith alone could shield their children from harm. Tensions at home rose with the seasons. Money grew tighter. His parents' arguments, once muffled, now snarled through thin walls. Desmond understood, in the silent, aching way only children do, that decisions were being made, which would fracture the world he knew. Sometimes, he caught his mother crying, face turned away. Sometimes, his father's hand shook with rage over debts or disappointments. When the decision to leave was finally spoken aloud, Desmond felt both dread and excitement. The day of departure was marked by a restless sky, roosters restless before dawn, and flooding rain turning the paths to mud. Neighbors gathered to say awkward goodbyes, women pressing yams and prayers into his mother's arms, older boys offering tough words of warning as if they were blessings. They loaded their belongings, bundled clothes, a battered radio, pots blackened with years of use, onto a truck whose engine rattled dangerously. Desmond clung to a wooden toy car his uncle had carved him, the familiar weight in his pocket a touchstone against uncertainty. As the truck carried them away, the green hills and familiar lanes shrank behind him. The journey to Kingston felt endless, every mile unspooling memories, every hour drawing them closer to a place that seemed more myth than reality. Through the rain-smeared window, Desmond glimpsed towns he'd never seen, felt the excitement and fear twist together in his gut. When they arrived, Kingston was monstrous and magnificent, far louder, grittier, and more relentless than anything the stories had promised. The streets pulsed with energy and risk. Towering buildings cast long shadows. The river of humanity flowed in every direction. The rawness of promise and peril roared in Desmond's ears. It was a place where a boy could vanish, or a legend could be born. That first night, crowded into a single room with his family, Desmond sensed the enormity of the threshold they had crossed. Outside, a different music thrummed, the heavy bass of a distant sound system, the laughter of strangers, the cry of a newborn somewhere in the dark. He lay awake, heart hammering, knowing nothing could ever be the same. From the cracked earth of Anato Bay to the relentless heart of Kingston, Desmond Ballantyne's journey into survival and self-discovery had only just begun. The boy who watched and learned in silence, who found rhythm in chaos and hope in hunger, was poised on the brink of reinvention. Though neither he nor the world yet knew it, the legend of Ninja Man had been set in motion. Chapter 2, Kingston, Ghetto Liveliness and Street Survival. Kingston did not welcome newcomers gently. The city pressed in with its ceaseless din, market vendors hawking produce in crackling patois, trucks rumbling past ramshackle tenements, the background pulse of fires, sirens, and reggae. For Desmond Ballantyne and his family, arrival in Jamaica's capital was less a promise fulfilled and more a bewildering confrontation with a new, unyielding reality. They settled into a crowded, sagging tenement where hope and hardship were bedfellows. Their room was barely big enough for 5 shaved-down mattresses and a battered radio rescued from a Notto Bay. The walls trembled with the arguments of neighbors, the laughter of children playing among puddles, and always the low, insistent throb of distant bass lines. The air, thick with sweat and diesel, tasted of uncertainty. Desmond's mother, unyielding in faith, sought the nearest church and organized the family into whatever routine she could conjure. Early mornings meant lining up at the standpipe for water, navigating corridors of jostling women and children. Afternoons, the city's scars revealed themselves, bullet holes on cement walls, abandoned lots claimed by makeshift gangs, the scuttle of rumors about last night's raids or missing boys. In school, Desmond found himself both anonymous and exposed. His accent, shaped by river and coast, marked him as an outsider. He learned quickly that weakness could not show. Even victories, a correct answer, a fast run, could make him a target. Fights broke out over the smallest slights. Teachers wielded switches and discipline with exhausted authority. But Desmond watched and learned. He watched who was feared, who was respected, who slunk through the halls, and who strutted untouchable. The streets of Kingston became his true classroom. Desmond navigated back alleys and side streets with a growing sense of alertness, piecing together survival strategies from the older youths. There was a system to everything. How to avoid the attention of volatile police patrols, when to blend in with the crowd, which corner shops might let you cool a soda on credit. He understood now why his father's eyes had grown guarded with city talk. Kingston offered opportunity, but first demanded proof of toughness. Beneath the city's harshness were moments of raw, vibrant energy that drew Desmond in. The sound systems, massive, patched together from scavenged speakers and old turntables, became epicenters of life after dark. On weekends, crowds flooded vacant lots for these makeshift parties. Voices rang out over rhythms spun by local DJs, their patter a mix of clever rhymes, street wisdom, and wild boasts. Here, poverty was suspended for a few blissful hours, and music became both shield and sword. At first, Desmond hovered at the fringes, absorbing the hierarchy of each dance, who controlled the decks, who freestyled without fear, who paid deference, and who demanded respect. The nickname Double Ugly, first offered in jest because of his wiry frame and quick tongue, latched onto him, folding into his evolving street persona. He did favors for crew members, lugging crates, running errands, fetching snacks. In exchange, he was allowed to listen, to observe, and sometimes to try his hand behind the mic when no one else dared. At home, challenges never relented. His father, caught between pride and defeat, drifted between odd jobs and long evenings lost in thought. Arguments flared over money, over the trappings of city life, over Desmond's growing fascination with dancehall's lure. His mother prayed more, clasping Desmond's hands at night as if to channel some of her faith into a world she no longer fully understood. But it was music that gave Desmond his first taste of empowerment in Kingston. Alone on the rooftop, he would practice the things he had heard at the sound system, his voice stretching and bending into patois, mimicking the phrasing of prose, and inventing new stories out of the night's electric energy. Sometimes, a neighbor below would shout at him to get serious, but more often the city itself seemed to listen, the lights of nearby parties blinking like small nods of encouragement. For Desmond, now both boy and masked survivor and dreamer, every street corner held a lesson, and every night was a rehearsal. He began to see Kingston in all its contradictions, a place where joy survived in spite of fear, where music gave voice to what could not be spoken, and where belonging was fickle, but possible, if you were bold enough to claim it. Kingston's ghetto liveliness was not merely a trial, it was a crucible. Here, Desmond's instincts sharpened, his wit grew, and his hunger for something greater took root. He understood that to rise above would require more than rhyme. It would require resilience, quick thinking, and a rhythm strong enough to carry him over every threat the city could throw his way. In the heart of Jamaica's capital, with every lesson learned and every risk taken, Double Ugly was forging himself, readying for the days when the world would know him not as Desmond, but as something far more powerful. The boy who had come with nothing but hope and hunger was steadily learning how to survive, belong, and someday command the mic at the center of Kingston's roaring stage. Chapter 3. Into the Fire. Sound System. Baptism. Kingston by night was a living gauntlet. Smoke drifting over rooftops, music thumping in the dark, and shadows sliding across narrow lanes like restless spirits. For Desmond Ballantyne, life had narrowed to a series of calculated risks and raw ambitions, and the city's relentless energy thrummed in his limbs every time dusk fell and the tenements began to stir. He was Double Ugly now, a name that started as a joke, but soon carried respect in the right circles. And every evening was a new audition, not just for acceptance, but for a sense of destiny. The world of sound systems was explosive, brash, and gloriously unforgiving. At first, Desmond earned his place by hauling speaker boxes, stringing wires, and running errands. So menial, they barely earned a nod of gratitude. But even in the sweat and chaos of assembly, he watched, memorizing who called the shots, which DJs commanded awe, which crews walked with swagger, and which with fear disguised as bravado. The Black Culture sound system, reigning over the neighborhood, became his second classroom. Sound system nights were spectacles. By twilight, empty lots transformed into thrones of metal and plywood. Vinyl crackled to life beneath spinning needles. Rhythms spilled into the streets, and the people arrived, hungry for new lyrics, new stories, and the chance to lose themselves for a few fleeting hours. It was here that Desmond saw the lines between survival and celebration blur. Gang disputes might disappear in a shared chorus. Heartbreak and hunger dissolved inside the pulse of pounding bass. His first time on the mic was an accident. An older DJ, wild on rum and bravado, stumbled off stage, and Desmond, jeered on by his friends, found himself gripping the battered microphone. The crowd turned their attention, skeptical, amused, expectant. Desmond's hands shook, but then the sound system's rhythm wound up, filling in the silences where confidence failed and words tumbled out of him. Sharp, sly, tripping over one another, but always landing in the groove of the beat. He called out local hustlers, teased rivals, and joked about survival, turning even his own nickname into rhyme. By the song's end, the audience roared, some in mockery, some in surprised respect. Double Ugly had entered the game. The battles that followed were as much psychological as lyrical. The world of sound clashes was brutal. A night's victory could make you, while a slip or a stutter could feed enemies for weeks. Desmond learned to wield words like weapons, improvising, baiting, and turning humiliation into punchlines that left crowds howling. Nights bled into mornings as crews debated who had the sharpest tongue, the quickest wit, the bravest heart. Across Kingston, stories of Double Ugly's rise traveled farther than he could walk. A skinny youth with the energy of 10 and the nerve to call out anyone. Mentorship came in the form of tough love from legends who haunted the circuit. Supercat, wry and intimidating, offered advice in riddles. Early B told stories between sets, dropping warnings about fame, enemies, and the thin line between applause and envy. Desmond, sometimes called upon, sometimes shooed away, listened to all, drank in their lessons, and repaid them in sweat and hustle. His family, meanwhile, watched with a mix of pride and anxiety. His mother clung to hope, praying daily that music would save her son rather than swallow him. His father, now ground down by the city's cold economics, offered stern warnings and moments of unexpected tenderness. Sometimes, Desmond arrived home as morning broke, his voice hoarse, but his spirits unbroken, already rehearsing the next set of lyrics in his mind. There were close calls. Police raids swept through the dance halls, scattering crowds as sirens roared overhead. Fights broke out over botched sound deals or insults flung too far. Some nights, Desmond barely avoided trouble, learning to spot danger in the tilt of a head or the tightening of a fist. Still, the promise of the stage, of power, of transformation, remained too intoxicating to resist. With every clash, he shed old doubts. The boy from Anato B, once hungry and invisible, now reached hundreds of years, sometimes as adversary, sometimes as hero, always with the hunger of someone still fighting for every inch. On the way home, the music still rang in his bones. The applause, criticism, and rivalry all blended into a heady vision of what might yet be. It was in these hard-won nights that something new began to take root. Desmond's identity became inseparable from the music and the myth-building of Kingston's Sound System Arena. The crowd adored improvisation, a lyric born on the spot, a clever retort to a heckler, a rumor spun into legend in real time. He learned to read a mood as quickly as he read a beat, to twist bad luck into stories that made people grin instead of pity him. The rules were as old as the city. Be fearless, be honest, be entertaining, or be forgotten. In the weeks and months that followed, Double Ugly stopped being just a name and started to become a legacy in the making. He discovered a certain magic in owning the stage, in having the courage to stand and speak what so many felt, but would never dare say aloud. Each night pressed him harder, but it also pulled him forward, toward new rivals, bigger crowds, and an identity more dangerous and potent than anything he'd imagined as a barefoot boy in Anato Bay. Unbeknownst to him, the seeds were being planted for a transformation that would soon shake Kingston and the dance hall world. The journey through fire was not complete. It had only just begun. Chapter 4. Reinvention. Becoming Ninja Man. Desmond, once strictly Double Ugly in Kingston's restless dancehall scene, began to sense the limits of the mask he'd adopted. As his teens drew toward a close, the runs between battered tenement yards and showdown sound system nights began to blend. Moments of triumph balanced by lows that could turn hope brittle. Yet inside that cycle, Desmond's ambitions only grew sharper, fed by the magnetism of the music and the electrifying unity it gave to crowds who had little else in common. What set him apart was not just quick rhymes or furious energy, but a hunger to be unforgettable. He studied the veterans, noticed how they held themselves, controlled a room, wielded humor and aggression in equal measure. Every battle on the mic became a rehearsal for reinvention, a test of his ability to outthink and outshine. This is where Ninja Man was born, an alias conjured by friends and rivals alike, impressed by his nimble, unpredictable verbal attacks and the lethal cool he brought to the stage. He embraced the name with the intensity of someone carving space in a city made for erasing the weak. Ninja Man was not just a grander moniker, it was an evolving persona, a combination of street-tough bravado, improvisational magic, and deep-rooted vulnerability. Sometimes, the new identity was like armor, warding off the sting of disappointment or ridicule, channeling childhood pains into a sharper form of self-protection. When he prepared for battle, nights when sound systems rolled into vacant lots or markets transformed into ad hoc clubs, Ninja Man obsessed over every word. His flows grew more complex, more fearless, stitching narratives about justice and vengeance with humor that could disarm even poisonous rivals. Crowds watched as he played with tempo, broke off rhymes mid-beat, or taunted an opponent, only to turn the joke on himself. dissolving anger in laughter. Mentors hovered at the edges. Early B, notorious for slicing confidence from the cocky, tossed Desmond advice, and sometimes a cold critique at midnight rehearsals. Supercat would appear now and then, sharing stories and warnings layered with the wisdom of experience. Ninjaman listened hard, even as he hungered to surpass his heroes, to claim his own legend among them. Family and friends reacted with a mix of pride and anxiety. His mother witnessed too many funerals in the neighborhood, feared that Desmond's growing notoriety might make him a target. His father, lost in the grind of city work, occasionally warned him not to mistake applause for love, not to trust followers too easily. Yet for Ninja Man, the crowd's attention was a drug he could not quit. Their cheers offered both affirmation and danger, and he craved every second. Meanwhile, Kingston's dance hall scene was shifting. Sound system clashes grew larger, wilder, with lines of allegiance stretching across neighborhoods, and neighborhoods shifting into miniature kingdoms of loyalty and rivalry. Promoters began to demand Ninja Man, eager for the unpredictable spark he brought to any battle. His legend spread not just through lyrics, but through the stories of how he turned violence aside with lines too clever for fists to challenge, of how he'd slip out of a jam with a grin and a line improvised in the face of trouble. Yet introspection came in the quiet hours. Ninja Man wondered if he was losing parts of himself, trading authenticity for survival, or if the act itself was a form of survival. He wrestled with loneliness, fame drawing a boundary between the boy who had run barefoot in Anato Bay and the man now mobbed by strangers in nightclubs. There were nights when his own reflection was that of a stranger, eyes weary and wild, mouth set in a line shaped by loss and longing as much as pride. His transformation, though not always smooth, was undeniable. Each battle, each joke tossed at a rival, each moment seized from the jaws of fear, etched the persona of Ninja Man deeper into the city's consciousness. In a world where boys like him vanish nightly, erased by violence or anonymity, he refused to vanish, to be silenced, to be forgotten. By the end of this season, Kingston was abuzz with Ninja Man's name. He'd taste both isolation and admiration, both the bitter and the sweet, as the final pieces of his legend settled into place. No longer only the hungry boy desperate for a voice, he was now a force to be reckoned with, a lyrical ninja forged by hardship and honed by fire, ready to claim a destiny larger than even he had ever dared to imagine. Chapter 5. Dance Hall Explodes. Jamaica in Flux. The air over Kingston in the mid-1880s was thick with anticipation, fear, and a brash electricity. The city simmered beneath the pressure of politics, poverty, and an irrepressible creative force rising out of its neighborhoods. Where rival parties and gangs clashed in the streets, another kind of warfare exploded. The war of sound that would shape Jamaica's next cultural revolution. Dancehall, once considered the unruly offspring of reggae, became the dominant voice of an era, its rhythms pounding through the city's veins at every hour of the day and night. Ninja Man, no longer simply another tenement youth, hungry for recognition, felt the transformation in his bones. His evolution from Double Ugly to the recently christened Ninja Man gave him the courage and notoriety to move beyond his corner of Kingston. Word traveled fast. In dancehall, reputation was currency, and Ninja Man's was growing ever more valuable. A wizard of improvisation, a fearless gladiator in lyrical battle, and a performer whose wild unpredictability made each appearance as charged as a storm. By this time, the stakes at every sound system clash had never been higher. Hundreds, sometimes thousands, would gather in vacant lots and street corners, drawn by the lure of booming speakers, cheap liquor, and the battle for musical dominance. In this crucible, Ninja Man's artistry took on new depth, each rhyme reflecting the hopes, angst, and hard truths of an audience desperate to hear itself in the lyrics. His shows became events not just for music fans, But for hustlers, politicians, and average Kingstonites alike, anyone who wanted to witness brilliance or destruction, sometimes in the same verse, the city, for all its danger, became Ninja Man's grand stage. The sound system clashes now pitted him against the best, Flower Gun, Shabba Ranks, Super Cat, and a growing cast of contenders from across the island. Each battle was unpredictable, a sharp-edged dance of boasts, insults, and stories spun in real time. Ninja Man excelled at turning the crowd, using humor or ruthlessness as the moment demanded, and transforming risks into opportunities. The bad man persona, both shield and sword, took root. He would show no mercy on the mic, but always left the sense that beneath the bravado lay deeper scars. Offstage, Kingston tensed under rising crime rates and the unending specter of political violence. Gunshots and sirens became as much a part of the city's soundscape as the speakers blaring the latest hits. Many in dancehall channeled these anxieties into music that was raw, urgent, and often controversial. Ninja Man, driven by the chaos around him, wrote lyrics that mirrored street life, stories of hustling, survival, the allure and peril of quick riches, and the price of fame. Critics called it dangerous. Fans saw only the truth reflected. The media took note, often latching onto Ninja Man's more outrageous exploits, onstage provocations, rumored feuds, bare-knuckle charisma. Headlines screamed of dancehall's menacing influence, missing the artistry and catharsis the music provided for Kingston's youth. Ninja Man, wary but shrewd, knew how to use controversy to his advantage. His name was always on people's lips, whether praised or condemned. With every story, every rumor, his legend grew. Despite the risks, both from rivals and from the ever-watchful police, Ninja Man's momentum rarely faltered. He survived raids, club shutdowns, and even the occasional street fight, always returning to the stage with fiercer determination. For every enemy made, a dozen new admirers appeared. The rhythm of the city, volatile and intoxicating, drove him to constantly outdo himself, pushing his craft, persona, and ambition to the limits. As the 1980s waned, dancehall erupted into Jamaica's most powerful cultural force, irrepressible and vital, just as capable of uniting as it was of inciting division. Ninja Man stood at its fiery center, both product and pioneer of a music revolution, born of struggle, hope, and relentless drive. He had grown from an outsider in a hostile city to a voice that could not be ignored, admired as much for his defiance as for the vulnerability that sometimes shone through his swagger. And the world beyond Kingston heard his echo. Producers, promoters, and DJs from the United States, Canada, and the UK began to see Jamaica anew, recognizing the pulse of innovation radiating from its sound systems and the essential role Ninja Man played in shaping that rise. The dancehall throne was still anyone's for the taking, but one truth by now was clear. Wherever the spotlight landed, Ninja Man was sure to be there, carving his legend in words and music, one explosive night at a time. Chapter 6, First Hits and Fandom. Kingston's nights move faster now, and Ninja Man was no longer just a rising voice on the margins. He was quickly becoming a defining presence in dancehall's volatile landscape. The late 1980s brought his first real breakthroughs, a moment when the promise whispered in shadowy street corners transformed into thunderous applause and radio play. His collaboration with Courtney Melody on the track Protection marked a turning point, catching the attention of a wider audience beyond the sound system circuit. This was a time when dancehall itself was evolving, a raw, urgent music that spoke unflinchingly of survival, street politics, and the dreams of an often forgotten generation. Ninja Man's lyrics cut through the noise because they were authentic, refusing to sanitize the gritty realities of Kingston's ghettos. His voice, at once snarling and melodic, captured the contradictions of a man who was both feared and admired, a symbol of toughness and vulnerability. But fame did not arrive softly. Headlines buzzed, often tinged with the sensational stories that accompanied his bad man image. Radio shows debated his violent verses. Community leaders criticized the message, and parents warned their children of his influence. Yet for many, Ninja Man was a hero, someone who spoke their truth when others turned away. His fan base grew rapidly, and with it, a fierce loyalty that sometimes blazed into intimidating passion. Crowds packed venues wherever he performed, and his shows became experiences charged with energy, unpredictability, and raw emotion. The sound clashes that had once served as proving grounds now became battles for supremacy, with Ninja Man standing as one of the most formidable contenders. Inside the whirlwind of rising fame, there were moments of quiet reflection. Desmond Ballantyne struggled to balance the public persona with the private boy who still haunted the margins of his mind. The child from Onato Bay who had gambled everything on rhythm and rhyme. Relationship strain, family connections stretched thin amid the demands and wildness of tour life and street politics. Yet even as the pressures mounted, music remained his refuge, his lifeline to the person he was and the legend he was becoming. The late 1980s were a crucible of growth, conflict, and rapid transformation. Ninja Man's first hits did more than win fans. They reshaped dancehall's sound and narrative, showing that lyrics could be both blunt truth and poetic defiance. In this moment, he was not just a performer, but a voice for a generation caught between hope and hardship, spectacle and survival. As the city thrummed beneath his feet and the kingdom of dancehall expanded, Ninja Man stood ready to push boundaries further. The battles would grow fiercer, the stakes higher, and the man who began as Double Ugly was fast becoming the undisputed Don Gargan, a monarch of words and sound clash, destined to leave a mark as indelible as the streets that raised him. Chapter 7, Clash Culture, The Art of Lyrical Battle. Dancehall's beating heart lived in the dramatic late-night sound clash, those kinetic gatherings where reputations were burnished or broken, sometimes in a single syllable. As the 1980s drew to a close, Ninja Man became a fixture in these battles, the air around him charged with both anticipation and provocation. Here, words were sabers, and the mic was a scepter, the crowd, an unpredictable jury, eager for spectacle. On any big clash night in Kingston, sound system trucks formed islands of light and sound in the darkness. Crews unloaded crates of vinyl, tested speaker stacks tall as a grown man, and the first strains of a Redim teased the promise of something unforgettable to come. Rival camps huddled at opposite edges. Shabba Rank's Roughneck Posse, Supercat's crew tuned sharp as razors, Flower Gun's associates raising their banners in raucous unison. Any misstep, a botched lyric, a forgotten line, could turn a crowd merciless. Ninja Man thrived on this chaos. He entered these gladiatorial contests clad in bravado, sharp eyes, sly smile, and the stance of someone who had learned to meet danger with laughter. His style was unpredictable. He might open with mockery, then switch to introspection, drawing cheers and gasps with each deft turn. He interrupted adversaries with a single, perfectly timed, "Hold up!" and then set the rhythm anew, reshaping the air between bass and snare. The battle with Shabba Ranks became legendary. Tensions thick as smoke, onlookers electrified by the rhythm of insult and offense. Ninja Man outmaneuvered opponents not only with bravura, but also with an honesty that cut deeper than bluster. He would twist a rival's own boasts, echo their slang, then spin it, turning crowd laughter into approval. Some nights, he played the villain, coaxing boos and admiration in the same breath, never afraid to tiptoe up to fights before pulling back, grinning. The line between performance and genuine provocation was always blurred, sometimes dangerously so. MCs with far less nerve than Ninja Man often folded under pressure, but he seemed to feed on it. He could read a crowd's shifting mood as intimately as he felt a rhythm's pulse. knowing exactly when to break tension with a joke or escalate with a call for real Badman lyrics. His improvisation, rhymes conjured on the spot, peppered with topical references, was second to none. Even rivals would admit, begrudgingly, that Ninja Man could turn a crowd as easily as turning a page. Victories in these clashes were never preordained. One memorable showdown saw Flower Gun land an opening barrage, only for Ninja Man to rally with lines fusing past hardship and present swagger, finishing to a roar that rolled through Kingston like thunder. Sometimes these battles spilled into headlines the next day, the press labeling Ninja Man a dangerous influence, but fans heard something else. The thrill of survival, the assertion of identity, the sense that, if only for an hour, their lives were centered on the stage. At home, the duality of fame weighed heavily. The clashes brought both adulation and fresh risk. For every fan wanting an autograph, there was an enemy seeking to pull him down. But Ninja Man, sharpened by his own trials, knew that greatness required boldness and resilience. He wore his scars with pride, even as he watched old friends fall out of touch or rivals set their sights on him with renewed focus. The art of lyrical battle was more than spectacle. It was a survival strategy, a means of negotiation in a city that respected only strength and wit, to stand unflinching before thousands, to spar with language, to laugh in the face of risk. This was Ninja Man's true calling. Each clash further cemented his status, making him both legend and lightning rod, someone who not only entertained, but became emblematic of dancehall's defiant creative spirit. By now, a whole country awaited each new encounter, the outcome always uncertain, the performance never repeated. The boy called Double Ugly was gone for good. In his place stood a master of ceremony, reveling in the battle, fearless in the dance, and above all, a king in the kingdom of sound. Chapter 8, Rise of the Don Gorgon. Kingston's dancehall scene was a relentless proving ground, and by the dawn of the 1990s, Ninja Man had outpaced most rivals, stepping into an entirely new realm of notoriety and influence. The stories people told about him now traveled further than any sound system could broadcast. Some whispered as caution, others as inspiration. In every corner of Jamaica, his presence came to symbolize both the highs and risks of sudden fame. If the early days were about gaining entry and respect, this was the era of domination. The city, quick to discard yesterday's hero, found itself unable to ignore Ninja Man, a man remade into legend by iron will and a sharp magnetic sense for the spotlight. His public persona, the Don Gorgon, was rooted in swagger, mystery, and danger, an unpredictable blend that kept audiences rapt and rivals wary. The name was borrowed from gangland mythos, but Ninja Man wielded it as a symbol of artistic rule rather than simple violence. He developed a stagecraft as formidable as his lyrics. Costumes grew more extravagant, entrances were carefully timed, and every public appearance was loaded with anticipation. What would he say, do, or dare next? Ninja Man's performances became electric with expectation. He sometimes stalked the stage in long coats or sharp hats, eyes scanning the crowd, bellowing challenges or confessions that seemed halfway between threat and gospel. He was a master of the dramatic pause, using silence as effectively as words. When the beat dropped, he seemed to control the entire arena, voice riding the rhythm like a wave breaking on stone. Even when the spotlight faded, his shadow lingered. Stories about backstage encounters, outlandish pranks, or quick-witted escapes from angry rivals adding to his mystique. Yet with the power came new pressures. The city's artists circled closer, some hoping to share his spotlight, others plotting to topple him. Junior DJs sought his approval or instigation. Journalists arrived with pointed questions, sometimes friendly, sometimes out for blood. Ninja Man responded with a deft mix of candor and contradiction, sometimes offering disarming honesty about his troubled past, other times hiding behind stories that blurred the line between fact and legend. This control of narrative made him as enigmatic as he was popular. At home, the double-edged sword of Don Gorgon's reign became clear. Ninja Man's family felt the strain. Relationships, complicated by fame, paranoia, and the ever-present threat of violence, became tangled. Some nights, exhaustion overtook him. Other nights, he was restless, haunted by losses no amount of applause could cure. Friends from his days as Double Ugly watched with unease as their companion became more icon than man. Allies became rivals. Every victory seemed to draw a new challenge from the shadows. Still, there were moments of stunning generosity. He reportedly gifted money to struggling neighbors, mediated disputes, and offered chances to untested DJs who once would have gone unnoticed. He recognized, better than anyone, how fragile survival could be, and how little separated ruler from outcast. The media's love-hate relationship with Ninja Man fueled his mythology. Headlines alternated between praise for his onstage brilliance and scorn for his bad man lyricism or rumored street connections. Police, sometimes viewing the dancehall scene as a hive of unrest, made him a regular target for surveillance and questioning. But Ninja Man's ability to weather controversy, twist public perception, and outmaneuver opposition became central to his legend. Every setback was folded into the narrative, making him not just a survivor of Kingsland's perils, but a maestro of reinvention. As the Don Gorgon, Ninja Man expanded beyond Kingston's borders. Invitations came from London, New York, Toronto, cities home to Caribbean diasporas eager for a taste of home, for the fire and charisma of a true dancehall king. He adapted seamlessly, his acts growing more polished, but never losing the raw edge that first won him fame. No stage was too big or too small. Each crowd posed a new challenge, and each triumph fed the myth. By the end of this chapter, Ninja Man was no longer just a product of Kingston streets. He was a cultural force, a complicated totem, a king whose empire sprawled across the boundaries of class geography and expectation. To some, his reign represented what was best in Jamaica's creative will. To others, he wore the crown of controversy. Either way, the Don Gorgon's shadow stretched far, challenging anyone who might forget that dancehall was as much about daring as about talent. A lesson etched in every move he made, both on stage and off. Chapter 9, King of the Streets, King of the Stage. Ninja Man's ascendancy through the ranks of dancehall had been both meteoric and hard-won. By the early 1990s, his reputation extended beyond the music. The persona of the Don Gorgon transcended the stage, embedding itself in Jamaican popular culture as the ultimate symbol of swagger, grit, and resilience. Street legends flourished about his exploits, blurring lines between fact and folklore. In Kingston's bustling neighborhoods, he was both an inspiration and a warning, a model for those who dreamed of greatness, and a reminder of the dangers that came with the crown. Night after night, venues across the island stood packed, the thick anticipation broken only when Ninja Man took the mic. His entrances carried the edge of street theater, a calculated pause in the wings, the flicker of spotlights, the adrenaline spike of the crowd as he strode onto the stage. Sometimes, he walked slowly, savoring the tension. Other times, he erupted with sudden witty banter that drew laughter or stunned silence. His movements had the deliberateness of someone who understood both the power and the peril in being watched. The street's lessons guided every performance. He navigated the treacherous politics of dancehall, rival crews, jealous promoters, the ever-watchful eyes of the police, with instinctive strategy. Encounters that might spark violence elsewhere were transformed on stage into clever anecdotes, rhymes laced with double entendre, or biting critique. Ninja Man's ability to command not just a crowd, but a whole community was legendary. Mothers sent messages of caution through the radio, while hustlers took cues from the nuance of his lyrics. Stories of his generosity helped balance the wild reputation. It was said he slipped cash to struggling families, paid tuition for younger relatives, and mediated disputes among neighbors teetering on the brink of disaster. These acts, rarely publicized, deepened his mystique and convinced many that beneath the famous bravado was a man deeply attuned to the street's unspoken codes of loyalty. Media attention intensified. Tabloid headlines dissected each new single and recounted real or imagined feuds. One week, he was vilified as a threat to moral ardor. The next, he was lauded as a genius who brought the city's struggles to the global stage. Ninja Man engaged with both the admiration and the attacks, giving radio interviews that shifted between jokes and confession, sometimes telling reporters off with a well-timed put-down, other times inviting them into his memories of starving in a Natto Bay or the razor-thin margins between stardom and oblivion. His circle grew complex as fame expanded. Old friends sometimes distanced themselves, wary of the drama drawn by the Don Gorgon's radiance. New companions arrived, some seeking real camaraderie, others simply hoping to bask in the glow of notoriety. With each victory on the mic, the stakes rose. Some nights ended in celebration, with fans shouting their love deep into the night. Others ended in tension, rumors of threats lingering long after the last encore, reminding everyone that even kings walked a tightrope in Kingston's hustle. Creatively, Ninja Man pushed boundaries. He experimented with new rhythms, collaborated with artists from other disciplines, and used the rapidly globalizing reach of dancehall to speak on issues far beyond Jamaica's shores. Racism, injustice, the beauty and impossibility of survival in a world bent on erasure. His lyrics, once strictly rooted in street bravado, now spun wider arcs. Tales of hope, warnings about the price of betrayal, flashes of vulnerable self-reflection that caught even his harshest critics off guard. Yet no matter the evolution, the streets remain core to his identity. Nightly, in venues fragrant with sweat and possibility, the Don Gorgon proved again and again that dancehall was more than music. It was resilience, rebellion, and the salvation of those who had nothing except their will and their voice. Ninja Man's throne was not built on comfort, but on the ceaseless drive to keep moving, creating, and above all, surviving. By chapter's end, Ninja Man stood as both a pillar and paradox of Jamaican culture, a king revered for his reign, but forever walking the fine line between fortune and fate. The streets that raised him continued to shape his legend. The stage, for better or worse, remained his true kingdom. Chapter 10, Wild Years, Stardom Unleashed. Dancehall success, for all its rewards, was a volatile master. As Ninja Man surged through the early 1990s, the tastes of Kingston streets and the demands of club promoters propelled him to new heights, and just as often, to new perils. The Don Gorgon found himself bouncing between hotel suites, street corners, and airports. His days a blur of interviews, rehearsals, dance hall clashes, and after parties that sometimes bled into reckless dawns. International acclaim drew Ninja Man onto airplanes for the first time. London, Toronto, New York, cities that pulsed with the energy of the Caribbean diaspora. The stages were bigger, audiences more diverse and expectant. Each show expanded his fame and his sense of isolation. Interviewers in frigid studios wanted him to explain Jamaica's contradictions in a few tight soundbites. Critics in print praised his lyrical wit, but scrutinized every nod to badness. Back home, his legend metastasized, each new rumor amplifying his mythology. The stories told in dancehall circles were now whispered in barbershops, debated in church halls, even making their way onto talk radio. Money and notoriety changed dynamics closer to home, too. Ninja Man's mother, still the anchor of a sprawling, sometimes fractious family, worried over his late-night returns and the persistent shadows. Former friends, wannabe protégés, and the occasional criminal looking for a quick payout. Gifts arrive more often. Groceries for a neighbor, tuition for a cousin, a crisp bill pressed into the palm of a struggling vendor. Yet so did threats and jealousies. Kingston's underworld had little patience for success stories, and the line between fan and enemy was often perilously thin. Touring was a drug and a battleground. The after-parties shifted from celebratory to surreal. Women and hangers-on vying for attention. Old rivals seeking reconciliation or a fresh excuse to start trouble. Sometimes, the excess slipped into spectacle. Ninja Man would be the first to admit he chased escape as hard as he chased applause. Rumors swirled of run-ins with law enforcement, of wild nights fueled by substances, of feuds reignited long after the music had faded. For every moment of triumph on stage, there was a quiet hour back in a hotel room, silence settling in, fame's glitter less convincing. Still, the music did not abandon him. Studios across Kingston and beyond called for his voice, and Ninja Man answered, lending energy, invention, and sometimes raw pain to every track. His greatest hits from this era, Murder Dem, Permit to Bury, and international collaborations, prove that even as his personal life spun unpredictably, he could anchor a rhythm, turn a deceptively simple lyric into street poetry. New generations of DJs credited the King for opening doors, unafraid to test the boundaries of what dancehall could be. Parenthood became another facet of this complicated era. Ninja Man's children, reportedly many, with mothers both celebrated and anonymous, brought moments of pride and regret. Some evenings he would reminisce with friends about Anato B, wondering what it meant to be a father when demand for the Don Gargan never ceased. Family gatherings were as spirited and drama-filled as any show, blending joy with disputes as complex as the beats he mastered. As the years wore on, exhaustion edged the triumph, a sense that even as the crown fit, it pressed hard. The more he chased recognition, the more he was chased by past injuries, broken friendships, old betrayals, and the fear that one wrong word, one careless night, could undo all that he'd built. Yet within the chaos, Ninja Man's artistry deepened. His lyrics continued to dazzle with punchline and provocation, but now there was sometimes a reflective note, a warning against envy, a lament for lost youth, or a glimpse into the heartache behind the bravado. He knew perhaps more than anyone that Jamaica's wild dance between fame and danger left little room for rest. The wild years of stardom were not just about breathless revelry. They were a crucible in which Ninja Man's legend would be tested, expanded, and inevitably changed forever. The road ahead, glittering and dangerous, stretched into the unknown, and still, the Don Gargan pressed forward, ever the entertainer, ever the survivor, uncertain what awaited, but determined, as always, to master the stage. Chapter 11, Upheaval. The shadows deepen. The pulse of Kingston slowed for no one, not even the Don Gargan. As the 1990s pushed forward, the highs of Ninja Man's career gave way to a darker turbulence. Success magnified the cracks and pressures that had always simmered just beneath the surface. Fame was not a shield, it was an amplifier, sometimes making even small failures feel catastrophic, and every slight seem monumental. Rivalries in the dancehall space sharpened with each passing month. Where once clashes had been spectacles of wit and musical prowess, now they sometimes teetered on the edge of real violence. Old adversaries remembered perceived insults and slights. New pretenders circled, hungry for a chance to dethrone the Don Gargan with a single headline-grabbing showdown. The mutual respect that bound Kingston's musical community became ever more fragile, replaced at times by an atmosphere tinged with suspicion. Within himself, Ninja Man fought a series of private battles. The lure of notoriety had always been double-edged. Night after night in smoky studios, party-filled hotel suites, and anonymous apartments on the city's outskirts, temptation wore many faces. Substance use numbed pain, celebration blurred into escapism, and old ghosts rose unbidden. He was a man pulled in several directions at once, star, son, father, icon, and at times exile in his own city. The pressure to stay at the top brought further strain. Family relationships became harder to maintain under the flashing lights of celebrity and the constant drumbeat of public scrutiny. Money flowed with unpredictable rhythm, sometimes flush, sometimes slow to trickle in, fueling new anxieties. Around him, friends and business associates shifted, some eager to share in success, others quick to disappear at the first sign of controversy. On stage, Ninja Man embraced and embodied the image of the ultimate survivor, but off it, he searched for meaning and stability. Spirituality, once background hum, became a louder call. He dabbled in new faith experiences and sought counsel from older mentors and church leaders. The contradictions of his life, bad man on the mic, penitent off stage, came into sharp relief. Some nights, his lyrics bellowed warnings against betrayal and violence. Other nights, he found a strange peace in the quiet corners of a Kingston sanctuary, whispering prayers his mother might have recognized from a distant past. Despite the swirl of unrest, Ninja Man's influence in dancehall deepened. Younger artists, many fighting the same battles of poverty and relevance he once faced, cited him as both model and cautionary tale. The genre itself sprawled in new directions, its sound ever more inventive, its themes grappling with the complicated realities of a Jamaica caught between hope and disappointment. But Kingston was unforgiving to those who faltered. Run-ins with law enforcement increased, police raids targeted the dancehall scene, and Ninja Man found himself entangled in legal dramas both real and sensationalized by the press. Every headline was a new wound, or sometimes a new badge. Reputation and record swirling together in a public perception that couldn't separate man from legend. Through it all, the music remained a lifeline. In raw studio sessions and small impromptu shows, Ninja Man experimented with narrative and sound, digging for ways to express not just bravado, but the true complexity of his journey. There was a new vulnerability shaping his verses. Glimpses of regret intertwined with warnings and boasts. Confessions woven subtly beneath the beat. By the end of this period, the shadows had undoubtedly deepened. Ninja Man stood at a crossroads between the persona he'd perfected and the man wrestling with doubt and longing beneath. The city, ever watchful, murmured with speculation. With every rumor and redemption, the line between fate and choice blurred, and the next act was poised to be his most consequential yet. Chapter 12, The Redemption Road. In the long shadow of turmoil and public controversy, a different light began to flicker in Ninja Man's life. The inexorable grind of Kingston, the suffocating closeness of adversaries, and the unrelenting gaze of the media left their mark. For a man forged in struggle, carved by hardship, and crowned on stages of sweat and spectacle, the prospect of reinvention seemed, at first, both distant and improbable. Yet winds of change began to stir, a spiritual awakening that few expected, perhaps least of all, Ninja Man himself. The pivot toward redemption didn't begin with a grand gesture. It was a series of small, often private reckonings. Nights once spent numb in the haze of parties or crises grew quieter, replaced by solitary walks, candid talks with old friends, and this slow return to forgotten rituals. An old Bible retrieved from a trunk, uneasy prayers whispered in the dark, a hesitant step across the threshold of Kingston Chapels. On the surface, the dancehall world remained skeptical. Ninja Man's bad man legend was too entrenched, his image too synonymous with danger and bravado to be shed overnight. Yet those closest to him saw a tiny, vulnerable trembling in his voice at times. The boy from Anato Bay, eager once more to believe in something unbroken. Stories spread that the Don Gorgon was seeking advice from pastors, mending old wounds with rivals, and trying to find solid reality and faith amid so much fiction and rumor. It was around this season that Ninja Man declared a public conversion. The announcement was met with equal parts cynicism and curiosity. Some journalists called it publicity. Others wondered quietly if it might save him from tragedy or destruction. On stage, he softened his tone in pockets. The biting bravado dulled, but his lyrics now drew on themes of forgiveness, redemption, and second chances. In interviews, he spoke with a candor that startled even hardened critics, admitting to regrets, mistakes, and the ongoing struggle to do better. Musically, the Redemption Road phase was marked by both innovation and unease. Audiences, conditioned to expect confrontation and explosive charisma, were drawn into the tension between old persona and new intent. Songs like Redemption Rhythm carried confessions woven into rhythms, messages of wanting to break cycles, warnings for youth tempted by violence, bittersweet calls for unity. Not everyone in the community was convinced. To some, Ninja Man's transformation seemed too sudden, too complete. How could Kingston's most infamous clash artist now ask for peace? But scars ran deep on both sides, and redemption, as it turned out, was not a straight road. Fissures opened within the fanbase, some rejoicing at the possibility of lasting change, others quietly mourning what they saw as the loss of an indomitable street spirit. Behind the scenes, the personal costs and gains were more complex. Family members long estranged by disputes or misunderstanding began to circle back. Tentative reconciliation, marked by awkward dinners and fresh starts. Ninja Man spent more time with his children, striving to be present despite a lifetime spent in motion. Trust would not be rebuilt overnight, but the effort was genuine. Even old friends marveled at the persistence with which he tried to heal what had broken in the years of his fame. Through setbacks and progress, relapses into familiar patterns and surges of new conviction, the Redemption Road era shaped the latter part of Ninja Man's journey. He did not renounce dancehall. He remade it, just as Kingston streets had remade him time and again. The city, never forgiving and never forgetful, watched carefully, aware that true change is measured by endurance more than declaration. If the Don Gorgon's rise had been an anthem of survival and assertion, his quest for redemption was a quieter, humbler verse, one still sung in the face of doubt and hardship. It was not an end to conflict, but a turn toward wholeness, the understanding that legacies are not just what is celebrated in the open, but also what is restored in private. In seeking his own redemption, Ninja Man offered a lesson as vital as any battle sung from the heart of Kingston, that even those built in fire and hardened in the streets can still long for something more, a chance to begin again. Chapter 13, Innovation and Influence. As the new millennium approached, dancehall found itself at a transformative crossroads, and Ninja Man, forever at the center of its turbulence, played a key role in shaping the genre's next evolution. Having survived the chaos of the Clash era and forged a public path of redemption, he continued to reinvent not only himself, but also the art and meaning of dancehall. The music was no longer confined to the streets of Kingston. Its pulse reached borders and continents, inspiring a wave of young artists and listeners worldwide. Ninja Man, still a magnetic if controversial figure, recognized that true power lay in adaptation and generosity. He shifted focus from pure rivalry to mentorship, sharing the secrets of performance and lyrical craft with up-and-coming talent. Sessions that once ended in dramatic battles were now as likely to become late-night seminars, advice given raw, sometimes rough, but always rooted in experience. Aspiring DJs flocked to his side, eager to learn from a master who held carte on stage and in the studio without losing touch with the neighborhoods that raised him. His innovation was deeply musical. Ninja Man experimented with new production styles, blending traditional dancehall rhythms with digital beats, roots reggae influences, and even touches from international genres. Collaborations with producers from the United States, UK, and Europe broadened dancehall's horizons and his own. He appeared on records with younger stars, often outshining them, but leaving space for their distinct voices. In interviews, he reflected on the importance of legacy. Dancehall must grow, must change, must welcome the youths. That is how the fire keep burning. Yet he never wavered in his embrace of controversy. Where other icons softened, Ninja Man stayed audacious, balancing tracks about spiritual struggle and redemption with others loaded with braggadocio, clever social commentary, and sometimes playful menace. The Don Gorgon persona, matured by hardship, became more nuanced, reflective, yet undiminished, capable of exposing hypocrisy in the system while still thrilling crowds with flashes of lyrical daring. Outside the studio, Ninja Man's influence was just as profound. Award shows, international concerts, and television appearances gave him new platforms to challenge stereotypes about dancehall. He spoke openly about the genre's misunderstood roots and its role as the voice of the Jamaican underclass. Where international critics questioned dancehall's rawness, he explained its code, storytelling born of necessity, catharsis, and survival. In Kingston, Ninja Man became something of an elder statesman, honored by some, challenged by others, but undeniable in importance. His presence encouraged unity projects, anti-violence campaigns, using music to reach at-risk youth, charity concerts, and school visits. Crowds still lined up for his shows, but now the front rows held DJs and dance crews who had once watched from afar, their own careers impossible without the path he'd blazed. At home, his family saw a new side. With age and reflection, Ninja Man made efforts to repair what years of obsession and notoriety had frayed, peer mentoring his sons, spending more time with daughters, and working to bring a sense of stability that music alone could not provide. Yet challenges persisted. The pressures of fame, ongoing legal entanglements, and the fast-changing music industry meant that reinvention was an endless task. But for every setback, Ninja Man returned with new energy. Sometimes chastened, sometimes rebellious, but always committed to the music and its message. By the close of this era, the Don Gorgon was more than a survivor. He was a cultural architect. His innovations reverberated through studios from Jamaica to Brooklyn to London, and his influence could be traced in the style, swagger, and substance of an entire generation of dancehall stars. Through decades of hardship and transformation, Ninja Man proved that real legacy is measured not only in personal triumphs or scandals, but in the lives and music he inspired to rise. In the next chapter of dancehall and his own tumultuous journey, his stamp was indelible, a testament to the relentless reinvention at the heart of Jamaica's most dynamic art form. Chapter 14, Warning Signs, Legal Troubles Mount. The echoes of Ninja Man's influence pulse through dancehall stages around the globe, but beneath the glare of spotlights and the bravado of performance, danger shadowed every accomplishment. The late 2000s marked a turning point for the Don Gorgon. As Jamaica's sound evolved and new stars rose, Ninja Man found himself dogged by the weight of old disputes and the ever-tightening scrutiny of law enforcement. Legal entanglements had always been a background hum in his life, threaded through stories and lyrics since his earliest days in Kingston. Yet these were different times. For years, rumors swirled about brawls outside clubs, feuds bleeding from the lyrical into the literal, and half-whispered accounts of violent altercations. Dancehall's notorious reputation did little to shield its kings from trouble with the state. In many ways, it made them more visible, more vulnerable to the ambitions of police and politicians alike. Raids on clubs and dancehall sessions became more frequent. Ninja Man was regularly summoned for questioning, his face as much a fixture in police files as it was in tabloids, or on posters advertising his next clash. Some charges were minor, disturbing the peace, curfew violations, a fray, each one chipping away at the armor of invincibility. But the mood had shifted, and in some quarters, there was real alarm that dancehall's wildest icon might finally be overtaken by the darkness he so often navigated in rhyme. Close friends noticed a restlessness. Where once his confidence bordered on arrogance, a certain wariness crept in. Even backstage, at triumphant shows, projects were postponed, collaborations left unfinished, and late-night phone calls became more common, coded with concern. His family, especially those who had earned his trust over decades, urged caution, but the rhythms of Kingston allowed little room for retreat. Every new controversy drew fresh headlines, spun by journalists hungry to trace the blurry edges between his public persona and the man behind Don Gorgon's grin. As the years advanced, the whispers turned to noise. A series of high-profile incidents, altercations at downtown clubs, police investigations linked to the machinations of street crews, set off alarm bells throughout the dancehall community. Even fellow artists, many shaped by Ninja Man's legacy, worried that he was being pulled toward a breaking point from which few return. Yet the Don Gorgon tried to counter the growing gloom by staying busy. He recorded in quick bursts of studio activity, sometimes managing moments of brilliance, other times chasing the spark that once seemed inexhaustible. On stage, he leaned harder into the themes of resilience and warning, lyrics brimming with coded messages about enemies, change, and the threat of betrayal. But the mounting legal clouds affected more than just music. Promoters, once eager for the chaotic draw of a Ninja Man show, began to hedge their bets. Venues pulled out, international invitations slowed. Even the fiercest fans started to betray a new note of worry as headlines turned more ominous by the week. In quieter moments, Ninja Man himself seemed haunted by the realization that the old rules, the ones he'd mastered, turning hardship and rivalry into spectacle, no longer offered much protection. Kingston had changed, and so had the game. The wild days that once crowned him king now threatened to become a prison. By chapter's close, the warning signs were blaring, impossible to ignore, not just for the Don Gorgon, but for everyone who had followed his rise. The next chapter loomed with uncertainty. One misstep could undo years of brilliance and sacrifice. Yet even as the walls of suspicion tightened, the spirit that defined Ninja Man remained, unbowed, aching for redemption, and still searching, perhaps more desperately than ever, for a way to outrun the shadows that danced just behind the throne. Chapter 15, The Fall, Trial and Conviction. The shadow that had long trailed Ninja Man finally stepped fully into the light in the late 2000s, shattering illusions of invincibility that fame and artistry had built. The unyielding energy that once made him a magnetic presence on stage now coiled in anxious tension as he found himself thrust into the crosshairs of Jamaica's judicial system. A singular incident, an act of violence that echoed both the street dramas found in his rhymes and the real-life volatility he'd spent years navigating, would trigger a reckoning neither he nor the dancehall world could ignore. The night in question was heavy with rumors before the facts ever surfaced. Reports of gunfire, a heated dispute, and the tragic death of a young man at a Kingston residence churned through the city like a riptide. For days, uncertainty reigned. Witnesses contradicted one another, details twisted in the press, and the streets pulsed with heated debates about guilt, loyalty, and the high cost of notoriety. Yet as law enforcement closed in and evidence mounted, the narrative surrounding the Don Gorgon shifted. Ninja Man was no longer just a performer or a persona. He was now a suspect accused of murder. His arrest was a seismic event in Jamaica's music and cultural landscape. Shackled and surrounded by cameras, Ninja Man's image flooded every newspaper and television screen. Once the toast of dancehall, he now walked corridors lined with guards and journalists, caught between the legacy he'd built and the threat that it might all be erased. Fellow artists offered words of solidarity, while critics and some former allies whispered about the inevitability of this downfall. The preliminary hearing stretched on and fans clustered outside courthouse gates, a mixture of hope and disbelief etched into their faces. The prosecution alleged premeditation. Ninja Man's defense insisted on his innocence and pointed to the chaos and danger that had always accompanied his public life. Kingston paused, holding its collective breath as testimonies unfolded. Old wounds, bitter rivalries, and lost opportunities aired in public for the world to dissect. The trial itself was dizzying. Old friends took the stand. Adversaries offered nods of recognition or condemnation. Journalists parsed every gesture for meaning, every word for contradiction. The Don Gorgon, by then a consummate performer, showed glimpses of both the streetwise bravado that made him a legend and the haunted introspection of a man cornered by fate. Throughout the proceedings, Ninja Man's legacy became a point of contention. Was he merely the inevitable product of Jamaica's harshest realities, or someone responsible for perpetuating the cycle? Could the figure who gave hope to so many now stand convicted, perhaps doomed to be remembered more for a single night than for decades of influence? Outside the courthouse, a nation reflected. Vigils sprung up, fans played his songs loud from rooftops, and club DJs spun tributes late into the night. Inside, the verdict drew near. Families of both the victim and the accused gathered, stoic and exhausted by years of waiting. When the guilty verdict was delivered, a hush fell. Ninja Man, once feared, adored, controversial, and celebrated, received a life sentence, marking a dramatic close to an era. He stood quietly as the sentence was read, a man transformed again, not by the theater of dancehall, but by the finality of the law. For the dancehall community, the conviction reverberated brutally. Some mourned, others pointed to the cautionary arc now complete. The legend of the Don Gorgon, once woven in the vibrant colors of Kingston's night, was suddenly stained with the gravity of consequence. Those who remembered the barefoot youth from Anato Bay, and those who knew only the king of lyrics and controversy, faced the same truth. Even legends are not immune from fate. Yet even as prison doors closed behind him, Ninja Man's story remained unfinished. The saga of triumph, excess, fallibility, and struggle, so intimately tied to Jamaica's own story, was now reaching inexorably toward its next chapter, fraught with loss, memory, and the resilient pulse of unfinished legacy. Chapter 16, Behind Bars, The Afterlife of Fame. Prison was nothing like the stages Ninja Man once commanded, but it was no less a crucible. The king of lyrical warfare traded spotlight for stark routine, exchanging applause and adrenaline for echoing silence and the mundane regimen of incarceration. Kingston's buzz faded into memory. Within the high walls and iron bars, time slowed, structure imposed itself, and the once uncontainable Don Gorgon became an inmate identified by a number, not a name. At first, isolation threatened to consume him. The sudden absence of shows, fans, and nightly challenges gave way to a relentless monotony. Mornings arrived with metallic clangs and the thudding of boots. Nights descended with the low murmur of confined men swapping regrets and stories. There was a different kind of performance here. The need to posture, to maintain a careful reputation, even within the hierarchy of the prison yard. Yet the world outside did not forget him. News of Ninja Man's conviction sent ripples across Jamaica and the diaspora. Fans on the streets mourned as if a family member had been lost. Murals cropped up in West Kingston, echoing his signature lines and persona. Some called for justice to be respected, others for mercy. But neither camp could erase the two decades of cultural significance that now rested in limbo alongside his sentence. Inside, Ninja Man adapted by degrees. He made efforts to avoid the worst conflicts, drawing on survival instincts honed from childhood in Anato Bay and the trenches of Kingston dancehall nights. Fellow inmates, some who'd grown up on his records, others with their own brushes with fleeting celebrity, approached him with both reverence and wariness. In the absence of the stage, he offered counsel, performed a cappella, or mediated disputes, sometimes using his wordplay now as bomb instead of bludgeon. Letters arrived by the bag, notes of support, pleas for forgiveness, stories of how his music changed lives. He read each, sometimes replying with short messages of encouragement or humility. The outside world's fascination only intensified with distance. Imprisoned, Ninja Man's mystique hardened. The line between man and legend further blurred by the lack of visibility and the abundance of rumor. Limited interviews were granted to select journalists, and in these rare glimpses, Ninja Man revealed an unexpected vulnerability. He spoke of regret. Regret for choices made, for lives affected, for not stepping back when he should have. Yet he remained fiercely proud of his art, his influence, and the movement he helped ignite. Family visits were a touchstone. Children, now grown, visited with mixed emotions. Some sought wisdom, others just traces of the father they scarcely knew outside the rhythms of music. Meanwhile, the dancehall community wrestled with how to memorialize him. Some kept his music in heavy rotation, defending his significance. Others moved on, cautious of how controversy could stain rising careers. The younger generation debated his place in the canon. Was Ninja Man a tragic hero, a cautionary tale, or simply a product of a Jamaica that had yet to outgrow its struggles? Years behind bars altered, but did not annihilate his legend. The trappings of fame, designer clothes, reflections in magazine spreads, the rush of crowd adoration, were exchanged for introspection. Sometimes he found peace, reciting psalms late at night in the dim cell or penning lyrics he hoped might speak to the outside one day. Other times, the old restlessness surged. His hands tapped out rhythms on the wall as if hungry for last applause. Ninja Man's afterlife in prison became a parable in its own right of the cost of kingship, of the razor-thin line between salvation and self-destruction. Even as chapter after chapter of his story closed, a nation and a global subculture continued to watch, speculate, and argue over what true legacy would remain when the noise of controversy faded. For the man himself, space was opening up, however narrowly, to reflect on who he was before fame, who he became at its height, and who he might yet be, even in confinement. The saga was unfinished. If the music could not reach him now, its echoes lingered, unforgiving, yet not without a sliver of grace. Chapter 17, Reflections on Regret. Prison, with its imposed silences and rigid schedules, offered Ninja Man something that decades of chaos never had. Time to reflect. The rhythm of confinement became a constant. Roll calls, meals at appointed hours, fleeting moments in the exercise yard. Behind every cell door, men shaped by violence and hardship held tight to whatever scraps of memory or hope they could clutch. For the Don Gargan, formidable in legend, the starkness brought old ghosts forward. Letters from fans and family became anchors to the outside world. Some scrawled encouragement, others pleaded for wisdom or forgiveness. Ninja Man read each note with a mixture of humility and pain, reminders of his influence and the complicated, sometimes contradictory mark he left on so many lives. He thought often of childhood days in Anato Bay, his mother's hands, his father's warnings. The simplicity of river mornings before a maze of Kingston swallowed him whole. What would the boy he once was make of this? Would he see success or sorrow? Journalists, eager for stories of downfall or redemption, occasionally earned a visitor's slot at the prison table. Some left disappointed, expecting outrage or flamboyance, and finding instead a man softened by years spent away from the stage. Ninja Man spoke at times of regrets, choices made in anger, paths taken out of fear, friendships lost to ambition or paranoia. He did not weep, not before outsiders, but there was a rawness when he recounted memories. The kindness of an old mentor, the loyalty of a vanished friend, a or the haunting faces of those hurt by cycles he could not break. Family visits carried their own emotional charge. Some children, now adults, arrived with guarded curiosity, testing whether the legend was still their father, whether he could offer guidance after years of absence. His mother, aged and unsteady, brought prayers and quiet smiles, refusing to speak of shame. These reunions were sometimes awkward, filled with silences longer than sentences, but each offered Ninja Man a sense of unfinished business, a hope still for restoration, however partial. Behind bars, he ministered to inmates when possible, echoing his mother's faith from boyhood. Some sleepless nights, he joined impromptu prayer circles or wrote verses treading psalms with the rhythms of dancehall, a kind of spiritual negotiation between past, present, and possible future. Other times, memories descended hard, prodding him with scenes from the wild years, excess, hurt, betrayal, fame's fleeting afterglow. Among the greatest burdens was grappling with the legacy left behind. In conversations with clergymen or trusted confidants, Ninja Man voiced his deepest fear that despite all the music, all the crowds, history would reduce him to headlines and cautionary tales. Was he only the sum of his crimes and controversies, or was there still time to rewrite his ending? The outside world struggled with the same questions. Documentaries emerged, blending praise with critique. Former rivals, now older, visited to pay respects or offer forgiveness. His name became shorthand for both the heights of dancehall ambition and the dangers of unbridled hunger, and a martial, if complicated, figure in the story of Jamaican music. As seasons passed and gray began to touch his temples, Ninja Man wrote more letters, unfinished memoirs, songs he hoped his children or protégés might someday record. There was no certainty of second chances, but the act of reflection itself offered its own form of redemption. For the first time in years, he felt the stirrings of peace. Not the wild applause of a sound clash, but the quieter acknowledgement of imperfection, endurance, and the possibility of reconciliation. Kingston streets no longer echoed his nightly triumphs, but the echoes of his story continued. Lessons hammered out in suffering and celebration. In the privacy of his cell, the Don Gargan made peace, as best he could, with the life that shaped him and the legacy he left behind. Chapter 18, The World Remembers, Ninja Man's Enduring Impact. Though Ninja Man was separated from the world by prison walls, outside, the story of the Don Gargan took on a life of its own. Time, distance, and rumor only sharpened the public's fascination, transforming a man once known for unpredictable wildness into an enduring legend whispered through the streets, played in dance halls, and debated by fans across generations. Tributes across Jamaica. As the years passed, his influence did not fade. It matured. Graffiti and mural art across Kingston depicted Ninja Man as both folk hero and tragic warning, surrounded by the symbolism of boomboxes, crowns, and lyrics etched in patois. In downtown clubs and street parties, selectors kept his rhythms alive. Anthems like Murder Dem, Permit to Bury, and Protection spun late into the night, their hooks and warnings as relevant as ever. Whenever news of his life behind bars surfaced, radio call-in shows erupted with memories. Testimonies from strangers who remembered his acts of kindness, rivals recalling battles that made them legends by association. Biographies, documentaries, and media reflections. The passage of time brought a wave of retrospection. Journalists, filmmakers, and authors revisited the saga, tracing his rise from barefoot youth in Anato Bay to dancehall's uncontested king, then to the spectacle of downfall. Documentaries aired both locally and internationally, blending archival footage of incendiary sound clashes with thoughtful analysis from music historians and former collaborators. Biographies, crafted from first-hand revelations and grainy stage recordings, painted a portrait of a man deeply flawed yet fiercely gifted, someone who stood as both a mirror and a challenge to the society that birthed him. Sampling, influence, and reinvention. For a new generation of artists, Ninja Man's style offered inspiration and caution. Tracks were sampled and reimagined. His punchlines, flows, and stage tactics became study material in the ever-evolving world of dancehall. In London, New York, and Toronto, diaspora artists wore his influence like a badge, borrowing his improvisational genius, his fearless badman persona, and his ability to swing between menace and vulnerability in the space of a breath. His name reappeared in unexpected places, shout-outs in international hip-hop hits, panel discussions about dancehall's role in political protest, academic treatises on culture and resistance. Even longtime rivals, who once plotted to dethrone him, acknowledged the gap he left behind, admitting that, without his electric presence, the very shape of dancehall changed. A legacy of contradiction and complex admiration. Ninja Man's legacy was far from simple. For every fan heralding his resilience, another invoked the cautions of his downfall. Social activists pointed to his life as proof of music's double edge. How art could empower and endanger, offer escape and entrapment in equal measure. Yet even the harshest critics conceded that the genre would be poorer without him. Events marking the anniversary of landmark sound clashes or the release of era-defining singles filled with stories and emotions. Awe, laughter, regret, and above all, gratitude for a spirit that refused to be tamed. Each year, tributes multiplied, remixes dropped in tribute, new documentaries unearthed unseen footage, and critics reevaluated not just the man, but the movement he came to embody. In the ever-present dialogue about what dancehall meant to Jamaica and the world, Ninja Man stood central, a symbol of triumph marred by loss, creativity tinged with warning, and humanity shot through with the contradictions of survival. Though physically absent, the Don Gargan never truly vanished. In every speaker's echo, every street artist's mural, every ambitious young DJ, a slice of his story carried forward, unfinished, untamed, and unforgettable. Chapter 19, Jamaica and Dancehall. Then and now, as the years since Ninja Man's conviction stretched on, Jamaica's ever-shifting landscape bore witness to both transformation and nostalgia. The vibrant tapestry of dancehall, once orchestrated by a handful of pioneers, grew broader and more complex, consuming the influence of new voices and fresh rhythms, while never quite letting go of its roots. Though the Don Gargan's physical presence had faded from the front line, his shadow persisted in rhythms, attitudes, and the cultural memory that shaped a nation in perpetual motion. The dancehall evolution. Dancehall was no longer the inheritor of reggae or the upstart son of ska. By the 2010s, its global footprint had expanded, a phenomenon sampled and celebrated in pop, hip-hop, and electronic music from London to Lagos, Toronto to Tokyo. A new school of artists, Alkaline, Spice, Masika, Popcorn, and more, took the stage, energized by digital advances, global streaming, and the constant interplay between Jamaican streets and the world's airwaves. Their music echoed with new concerns, migration, gender, digital hustle, political frustration, but also drew on the raw traditions Ninja Man and his peers had perfected. Sharp tongue clashes, urgent storytelling, an unyielding ability to transform pain into poetry. Yet every generation felt the weight of history. Old school DJs returned for legendary stage shows or reunion clashes. Younger stars borrowed, reinvented, and remixed classics, always invoking the legacy of the Don Gargan and others when defining themselves. The spirit of badman, bravado, remained, but so too did the pressure to balance notoriety with purpose. In interviews and roundtable debates, artists and producers cited Ninja Man's improvisational skills, his fearlessness, and the tension between self-destruction and creative fire that marked his era. Kingston streets, changed and unchanged. The streets of Kingston, though modernized in patches, bore witness to the ongoing struggle between hope and hardship. Gentrification crept along the waterfront and into select neighborhoods, but the city's heart, its bustling markets, restless sound yards, and late-night dances beat much as it always had. Young DJs squared off at corner events, vying for respect in the same way Ninja Man once did. Microphone in hand, story in mind, risk in the air. Policing and politics evolved, but economic hardship and social inequity remained stubborn fixtures. Many still saw music not only as entertainment, but as currency, self-defense, and sometimes salvation. Murals painted on derelict buildings showcase both new aspirations and the familiar images of dancehall icons, reminders that the pursuit of recognition and resistance was far from over. Dancehall's new torchbearers. If Ninja Man embodied dancehall's wild complexity, its charisma, controversy, and insatiable ambition, a new generation sought to write their own legends. Female artists like Spice broke barriers and stood their ground, challenging the genre's gender norms. Collaborations with international superstars from Drake to Beyoncé brought dancehall to global charts, while grassroots innovation continued to buzz in Jamaican studios and festivals. Social media gave rise to new forms of connection and contest, Instagram battles, viral remixes, and direct access to fans. The clashes Ninja Man once ruled were now as likely to play out online as in jam-packed lawns. But the core energy, the fight for respect and identity, persisted. Remembering the legend, Ninja Man's legacy lingered in the codes and aspirations of the people. For the elder statesmen and fans, his name was a byword for an era when dancehall felt both revolutionary and perilous, when performers risked everything on the edge of each rhyme. For the young, he was both cautionary tale and hero, a figure who showed that greatness could emerge from anywhere, at any cost. As Jamaica moved forward, its politics, music, and culture transforming year by year, the echoes of the Don Gorgon's reign stayed present. In the clash of beats on a Friday night, in the bravado of a new rhyme, and in the stories mothers told sons about surviving and striving, the energy that once defined Ninja Man refused to dissipate. Through this woven narrative, past and present, pride and pain, Jamaica and dancehall thrived, always looking ahead, but never forgetting the wild, unforgettable force that brought them to this moment. Chapter 20, Legacy Seal, From Myth to Memory. The passage of time is relentless, dissolving the vibrant immediacy of legends into the grainier memory of history. Ninja Man's story, spread over decades of triumph, turbulence, and transformation, has by now merged with the narrative of dancehall itself. A larger-than-life fable passed from one generation to the next, richer and more sprawling in every retelling. From the mud lanes of Anato Bay to the neon glare of Kingston streets, and onto the exile of his final years, the Don Gorgon's journey embodies the beauty and brutality of survival against the odds. The complexity of inheritance. Long after stages fell silent and headlines faded, Ninja Man's legacy continued to spark argument, inspiration, and reflection. For many Jamaicans, his life was a lesson's rich paradox, proof that greatness can rise from struggle, but also a warning about the temptations and betrayals that come with rapid ascent. Celebrations of his influence were often twinned with caution. Music schools analyzed his flows in workshops. Journalists debated whether his impact on youth culture was ultimately redemptive or perilous. Some hailed him as a pioneer who unlocked new creative boundaries. Others, burned by personal encounters or haunted by his violent lyrics, argued his greatest stories were warnings dressed as anthems. The legend on the world stage. Across oceans, artists from London, New York, Lagos, and beyond paid tribute. Dancehall's global influence, its rhythms, slang, and brash inventiveness could be traced in no small part to the era Ninja Man helped define. His signature style of lyrical improv and fearless persona became touchstones, references recognizable to anyone who ever stepped onto a sound system stage or dreamed of turning hardship into artistry. At tribute concerts, the Don Gargan was invoked, his classic tracks opening sets, his infamous rhymes recited to wild applause. Diaspora communities hosted panel discussions, exhibitions, and film festivals exploring the arc of his life, the cost of pioneering, the complexities of identity, the tenuous line separating self-creation from self-destruction. Family, faith, and reconciliation. Within his family, the myth receded before the reality of loss, reconciliation, and endurance. Children, some grown, some still finding their place in the world, revisited their father's story in old recordings and interviews, searching for meaning and closure. Old friends and rivals made peace as years dulled the sharpest edges of betrayal. Faith, instilled in him as a child and rediscovered late in life, became the final comfort, an anchor in memories, prayers, and the hope that his journey would help others navigate their own. The unfinished song. No legend is ever truly closed. Each generation finds its own verse to add, its own lessons in both the rise and the fall, in the alleyways and nightclubs of Kingston, in community halls from Toronto to London. The echo of Ninja Man's path persisted, a reminder that art is born not just from talent or luck, but from the relentless refusal to vanish. In the defiant laughter of a new DJ, in an old song spun by a street selector at dawn, Ninja Man's memory lives on, not just as a caution or a celebration, but as a living challenge to be bold, to speak truth, to risk everything for the music that makes survival possible. And so the Don Gargan became more than just a man. He became a legend etched into the mythos of Jamaica and the wider cultural imagination. A legacy sealed not by any single act, but by a lifetime of reinvention, resilience, and rhythm. In myth and in memory, his story remains unfinished, an invitation for those who follow to redefine the dance, and in so doing, their own place in the world.